Welcome to Conscious TV with Tom and Ramon on BBS Radio.
So, the other day I was getting up for work, and I went out to go start my truck, and it was about 25 degrees out, and it snowed, and first step I took, boom, I went down three steps. I heard this big pow.
Ow.
And I went, oh, I broke my ankle. And then the first thing that popped in my head was, where's the silver lining in this? And then I just was like shocked at myself at having that being my first thought of where is the silver lining? It just kind of blew me away. It really, really showed me how much I've changed in the last few years about my whole attitude.
Here's the funny part. Tom had set up on the website. If you go to the website, you can see it, where if you have any family members or you're going through any issues, we'll send you some good loving intention to help you heal. And Tom mentions this and said, he puts it up, makes it, and then he go ahead and breaks his foot.
The next day.
So if you can send him some loving energy to heal his foot, it would be highly appreciated.
Maybe I'll take a picture of it and put it on that page.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
So, buddy, what are you grateful for this year?
I'm grateful for, I'm grateful for the coffee I'm drinking this morning. It's morning where I'm at. But seriously, I'm grateful for the chance to come to Japan. I'm grateful to my wife. And I'm grateful to Brooks Agnews, who helped us put the show together. And I'm grateful to you and everybody out there who helped us get the show together and listening.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll put all that in the same bundle with me. I'm also grateful for the opportunity to be here at this time in history and do what I can do towards making a successful future for mankind on this planet, win or lose. The experience of just witnessing and participating during this time of great change is absolutely an amazing and a momentous event. I can't think of any other period in history that I'd rather be alive. So who do we got with us tonight, Ramon?
Today we had Scott Stevens, and I want to thank him a lot for being able to do the show. But before I introduce him, I just want to make sure to let you know that me and Tom actually have other jobs. And if you can't, please donate. You can go right to our website at www.conscious-tv.com. So, Scott Stevens is an award-winning television weatherman who a decade ago began investigating the claims of Lieutenant Colonel Tom Burden that North America was being subjected to full-time weather modification. During the course of that personal investigation, he was the first to discover the primary reason for the now global chemtrail phenomenon. During Scott's two decades television career, he worked in Topeka, Kansas, Omaha, Nebraska, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Albany, New York, and Pocatello, Idaho. Let's introduce Scott Stevens. Scott, are you with us?
I am.
So how are we going tonight, Scott?
And I'm grateful to be here.
Great. So weather wars thing, this chemtrail phenomenon is pretty wild. I never used to see those the contrails behind the planes hang around like they do nowadays. What's up with those things?
Well, you know, before I recognized what was going on, you know, I uttered those same words. You know, I never used to recognize this. Doesn't mean they weren't there. You know, and as I have, you know, kind of delved into this quote-unquote conspiracy theory, you know, you come across a lot of different data points. And I wasn't kind of a believer in the chemtrail phenomenon until the spring of 2005, even though I was aware of the term chemtrail for probably 7 years ahead of that. And I thought, well, with my unique background, my meteorology education and years of, you know, watching the weather and forecasting, I should be able to get to the bottom of this particular story. And so I just kind of began an open-minded research, you know, and I was already kind of on a spiritual awakening at the time, so that allowed me to step out of a box that I had been in. And, you know, it's funny when you step out of a box, you're just standing there in awe and wonder of things that are there that you simply didn't believe in, and so they didn't exist. And so that was, the chemtrails became, you know, one of those things that I'm like, holy cow, I see it. And then it took a while to figure out, you know, what the whole gig was about. Because for several years, it was all of the material I had read on the web was that it was a poisoning thing for us. And I just like, I'm sorry, do you want to kill human beings? There are much better ways to do it rather than with, you know, commercial-like aircraft, you know, flying curious patterns in the sky. It just didn't seem right to me. And so I couldn't get on that chemtrail conspiracy until I had actually kind of discovered a motive. And that took some time.
So, you know, I have a lot of problems with emotive myself. I still just can't understand how somebody can, excuse the term, but pee in their own post-toasties. You know what I mean? I mean, they're destroying their own world, too.
Exactly. So the question is, are they really destroying it with this action? And I suppose that would be a matter of debate and maybe even at times intense debate. But from where I see this now, a dozen years into this investigation, they know what they're doing. They know the environmental thresholds, and they're trying because their kids have to live with this. They have to breathe the air, you know, whoever they is. But they're aware exactly of what they're doing. But in their mind, the perceived benefits of these actions outweigh the environmental degradation that is resulting from it. So, there's two thoughts that we can deal with this, but there's an end game in this, and it's much like running a car up to a cliff, and they know they can stop in time, without causing irreparable damage, or there is that cliff still there, but they don't care whether they go off the edge or not. There's something else there that will then sustain them or take them over the gulf of the divide. Mm. So I think, you know, they're wrestling with one of those two issues. And that cliff has to be a 2012 event.
Mm. Go ahead, Tom. I'm sorry.
So this is starting to get a lot more publicity out there. Now, there's a lot more people that are becoming aware of the whole chemtrail issue. Have we got any politicians on board that are actually trying to do anything about this? Because everything I've seen, they all just play ignorant.
Well, I think what they've realized or have been briefed is that this beast is much bigger than any one of them. And so the congressmen, pansies that they are, you know, are not willing to take this beast on. You know, Congress has been largely neutered over the last 100 years since they created the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
You know, they've given up their monetary policy. They've given up, you know, literally steer the economy of this particular country, and they've become, you know, a puppet of the banks. So Congress is pretty damned ineffectual. You know, they draw a check and they can add laws to the books and add laws to the books, but you know, any additional law to the books is just a degradation of society. So it's a one-way spiral down when you engage Congress. So,
there's not much out there, is there?
No. You have to go to the people, and I think, as you said at the very beginning, you know, there needs to be, and many people are now striving for, an awakening in consciousness of the people. And once that little eking of light comes into their being, then they begin to see things in a different light. It's a subtle energy. It comes in slowly. But at some point, there's enough light in the room that you begin to make out your living quarters. And it is not a Garden of Eden, but it is a courtyard with a fence around it, and maybe some barbed wire on the top if you so desire.
Yeah. So I'm seeing all these things that happening like now, like the chemtrails, the TSA, the crap going on right now, the oil spill in the Gulf, all of those things. I see as kind of if there is this elitist group out there trying to push all the buttons and steer the world, all these things that they're doing out there are actually having a counteractive effect for them because they're actually waking people up with all this stuff.
And I think they're aware of that, and I think that they walk a very, very fine line in revealing too much of what they're doing and how they're doing it. The other aspect is that humanity is changing. You know, in the last four generations, humanity, and almost it seems like the souls inhabiting the human body are braver. There's a little more courage in them. There is, a certainty and we kind of have to see that, you know, that there is the restrictive aspect of what they're doing to us, and whether the chemtrails are screening out an aspect of divine light that's coming in from the sun or from the galactic core, or it is to subtly introduce pollution or slash poison into our bodies, or it's weather modification, which is what I think probably 98% of them are up there for, is dealing with ongoing, weather modification, geoengineering, something that, the Sierra Club would be seriously flipped out about if things was going on. But yet you have the Sierra Club and all these environmental groups, Environmental Defense Fund, that will not touch the chemtrail story either.
Right.
So, it's like that the environmental movement has also been corrupted. So I withdrew from all of them, and I think it was like 2006, 2007, because I was kind of a bit of an ardent supporter of those environmental movements. But if they can't see or investigate, what's going on in the sky, then, I'm not sending them my money. They're just not worth it. They're not worth it.
Yeah. I would like to you... for a couple of minutes, give us some of the evidence for those listeners out there who are probably sitting there saying, this is BS, or he doesn't know what he's talking about. I know it's something as simple as just look up. You don't need to be a scientist. But give us, what's the difference between a contrail and a chemtrail?
The chemical composition. It's very simple. A contrail historically is a condensation trail, and it's a resultant of the hydrocarbon emissions resultant from a jet traveling, in a cold atmosphere. And the contrail becomes a persistent contrail if the atmosphere at altitude that the plane is flying at, it's upwards of 60 to 75%, and then you can have a contrail begin to seed an ice cloud or a cirrus cloud or a cirrostratus kind of cloud. And then you can begin to generate some high clouds from that activity. But what caught people's attention was the iridescent colors in the wake of some of the early contrails that were happening in the 80s and 90s. They're like, ooh, that sheen, that is not white, that is not water vapor, there is some other chemical mixture in there. But the huge telltale sign was that these trails became persistent with humidities that were as low as 20%. So how can you provide sufficient moisture to generate a thousands of square mile contrail with just the moisture from, the combustion of the jet turbine? And you can't.
No.
You can't. There has to be something else there, some other seed, something that changes the polarity, the positive negative charge of those particles that are there. And as they become profoundly positively charged, then you begin to draw in the water molecule. And then the water molecule becomes attached to the seeds that are up there, the nanoparticles. And then you begin to generate a cloud cover from one pass of one particular plane. So, when I was beginning to investigate this, it was in and around the turn of the century. It was 9/11-ish, and you know, Bush had just gotten elected, and you know, everything was going to hell in a handbasket. But I mean, that's really when my contrail research began, and it wasn't until 5 years later that I got it. But it took me spending $2,000 and buying computers and cameras and time lapse software to catch the planes in, because they have very specific places of interest in the clouds, and if you're not paying attention, you know, because you can glance up and see the activity in the sky, like, oh, chemtrail today. But why is that trail there? And why is that one there? And there is a geometric relationship between all of them. All of them. Short ones, long ones, ones that don't last. There are some of these weather engineering planes that don't leave trails at all. But yet they're still up there changing the local ionization. And if you change the ionization, you change the ability of the atmosphere to create rain.
From what it sounds to me, it sounds like they're doing some kind of grid and some kind of geometry. Is it maybe something they've discovered that the average weatherman doesn't know about? When you lay these chemicals in a certain pattern, in other words, using higher dimensional energy or something like that with the way they're laying this grid down, or maybe blocking it?
Absolutely. I think all of that is happening. I think your regular weatherman is profoundly ignorant when it comes to natural sciences, profoundly ignorant when it comes to the subtle energies that surround everything, everything. Wilhelm Reich termed it Ordon, and it's the chi. And, if chi, Ordon, and how it works and its physical characteristics, or how it changes its physical surrounding, you know, it would completely change weather forecasting. And you would see weather forecasters get many more forecasts correct. You know, and that was ultimately what it was all about and what it was about for me. Now, chemtrails are usually very powdery. They're powders. They're simply powders. And these powders are of different sizes. And when you lay out an X in the sky with a 90-degree angle, or ovals are showing up all the time. There's all kinds of planes up there literally doing loops and circles. What they're capable of doing is illuminating a target zone. So you're painting a target in the sky, whether it is a narrow channel, maybe 2,000 feet deep or 1,000 meters in depth. And then that channel is bounded by one flight to the north, another that is to the south, and then it's 4 miles wide. And then they'll introduce an energy into this channel.
So
this energy will manifest as ripples in the clouds. And so rippling is capable of changing the speed of the air.
You think the transmitter for that energy is HARP?
That's just one of them.
Didn't HARP come online about the same time that chemtrails started really getting thick?
Chemtrails were in ahead of time. Chemtrails came along before HARP. And then there's upwards of 20 of these HARP-like antenna arrays, you know, around the northern latitudes. So, you know, HARP is the public program. You can go look at it. Jesse Ventura can walk up to the gates and demand access, la, 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 la. It's just the one that they put out to get people's attention.
Right.
You know, the big ones may be underground. They may be in Norway, where we had the big spiral last November.
Right.
You know, there are apparatuses and technologies parked all over and under this planet. You know, Honeywell has contracts for some of the low and mid height satellites that are dealing with the directed energies. You know, and an aspect of the chemtrails is, if you're not well, if you go to the doctor, the doctor needs to see how your circulation system is working. What does he give you? He gives you a drink, and there's some barium in it.
Right.
You take this barium into your system through magnetic resonance we can then see how those barium atoms vibrate in your body. The same thing happens in the atmosphere. And so there are multiple chemtrail mixtures, you know, flown at 15,000 feet, another one at 21,000 feet, another one at 27,000 feet, another 33,000 feet, another one at 42,000 feet. And you illuminate different layers of the atmosphere. So from above, you can see how the digitizing effect, where the atmosphere has literally been layered off into cells and grids, and it's A71 by B42. Let's add some heat there. As we add some heat there, we need a little chemtrail mixture in there to grab onto the heat and then translate it into the nitrogen and oxygen molecules. And we need a little particle to do that. So we need to run a couple of flights through there. After we've added the energy to that zone, that grid, then we'll run another flight. See how it's changed. Are we happy with it? If we're happy with it, we leave it alone, go on to the next one. If we're not happy with it, we apply another electromagnetic solution or another ionization solution, run another sortie of flights across it, and measure. That data then goes into a weather model, and then the weather model is constantly churning outputs, outcomes, forecasts. And so there's this real time back and forth, as whatever agenda they have created for Earth, you know, they're trying to, you know, use the resonance that they're introducing into the atmosphere to grab it and train it and you know, create a big ridge in the west. And that creates a huge arc over western Canada, picking up Arctic air and then spilling it into the eastern states. And once they've created that wavelength, there's going to be a harmony. There'll be one off in the Pacific, off the Aleutians, and then there'll be one over Iceland and western Europe. You know, so everything is connected.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And they need the bloody chemtrails to follow it all.
So from what you're describing, it almost sounds like a what's the best way I can describe this? Like if I was using my ether cable and I connected from my modem to my computer. So they're connecting these either HARP machines or other machines that we may not know about onto the ionosphere. And then this way they're able to control it or manipulate it.
Well,
is that, am I understanding?
That's close. That's close.
Yeah.
But if you go to YouTube, search Cymatix, C-Y-M-A-T-I-C-S. And what you'll see are experiments with liquid starch, experiments with sand, experiments with powders of different sizes. And what they will do will spread these powders over a tight surface, whether it's an aluminum sheet, whether it is a stretched-out balloon or a sheepskin. And then you apply sound. You apply a resonance to it. And these particles will begin to dance. They will begin to dance in geometric patterns that will blow your mind. And as you look in the sky, you will begin to see these patterns of scale, enfolding fractals that are manifesting because they're resonating the molecules in the atmosphere at certain wavelengths. And you will see rainbows in the sky. You will see sun pillars and arcs and all kinds of colors when this resonance is on. There was a time 50, 60 years ago when you would see sun arcs and sun pillars and all of these things, but it was rare and largely restricted to winter time. Now, season doesn't matter, latitude doesn't matter, because the whole of the atmosphere is being resonated. And there are sympathy resonances that begin to show up in the crust of the planet. And those can be some unintended earthquakes that show up, because so much energy is being loaded onto the surface of this planet. So, guys, this is an amazing project that's going on. And it's not that I don't think we can't do it or we shouldn't do it. It's just that the people doing it are not the ones we want doing it.
Well, you know, I can see where, I can see somewhere being in a situation where some sort of modification would be good. You know,
absolutely.
But
if it's something you can figure out and something that the human mind, you know, as limited as it is in this awareness, you know, can figure out and do, then we're going to do it. That's just human nature. That's
right.
Just how we are as beings. You know, it's just, it's time for it not to be covert. It's time for us to set out a public agenda of what we want this planet to look like. Do we want floods? Do we need floods? Do we want to need droughts? Do we need blizzards and tornadoes? Do we need hurricanes? And the answer is probably yes to all of the above. It's just that if it's going to come, we need to know ahead of time and batten down the hatches and let the rain go. And because there's a certain expressiveness, there's a certain need to breathe that this planet brings with her. And we have to allow a majority of those natural processes room to happen. So if we need rain in the Southwest and it's June, then we can do it subtly. We can bring in some of those energies and we can allow it to manifest. We don't need to be so, you know, hard-nosed or NFL about, you know, what's going on in the skies right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think if this was brought out into an open forum, I think we could probably come up with something a little bit better than aluminum and barium. You know what I mean? We could. We've got some pretty smart cookies on this planet that could figure out some stuff that given the chance, I know there's an answer. You know.
You know, and maybe that once that happens, we end up with a different budget point to do this with, and with a different budget, then we can create different particulate matter that will accomplish what they wanted to do. So, and you know, when it comes to paying for all this, I really think it's all the Federal Reserve. It's the shadow banking system that's paying for it. So, you know, if this had to be brought into a mainstream DOD program or EPA program, you know, it would be a very, very expensive item to drop into the federal budget, especially now with our massive deficit spending. So I really think it's all been digi dollars, and none of us have really ever paid for it, save for the unnecessary expansion of the money supply.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I heard that some of the chemtrails had like chemical agents in it and biological agents, like human red blood cells.
Yeah.
Have you heard this before?
HIV, there's a whole host of things in there. You know, the only growth industry that's going on in this country right now is the health industry, healthcare. And
it's not only in that country.
Yeah.
It's worldwide.
So just stay healthy, guys. Stay healthy. There's some very basic things that we can do to keep our bodies, you know, working above and beyond the general population.
Right. Now going into one of your other projects there, the Ormus, that seems to be some pretty dynamic stuff. Ramona's got some, and he's just barely started it. And
I'm like three quarters of the way done with the bottle.
Yeah. Are you now? Ormus is kind of an amazing thing. It is ancient. But yet it hasn't really been in the public consciousness for more than about 30 years now. So, and what it consists of are elements in their M state or their high spin state. And these elements are found in different ratios in different salts, you know, around the planet. You know, salt from the Andes is from an ancient ocean that was folded over and buried in the Andes, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago. And then salt from the Dead Sea, you know, has been there since the salt, the Dead Sea was, you know, separated from the Mediterranean about 500,000 years ago. And then we use Celtic salts, high in platinum group metals that come from the coast of France, and that's a cold Atlantic, you know, salt. You know, so we bring these together in different ratios. And as you do a pH swing, which is, you know, something they were able to do, you know, 3,000 years ago, on the salt water with different salts in it, then elements in this high spin state begin to manifest. And there's a lot of magnesium, and people need and aren't getting enough magnesium in their system. Dead Sea salt has a nice quotient of monoatomic gold. and that gold goes right to the pineal gland and begins to stimulate it and wake it up.
Speaking of,
mm-hmm.
No, go ahead, finish up, and then I'll tell my story.
Okay. Well, and we know that the Anunnaki came here to mine for gold, but we're told that they were mining the oceans. So that makes you wonder, were they really after metallic gold, or were they after monoatomic gold?
Another little coincidence thing there, their gold supposedly was for their atmosphere.
Absolutely. So they must have had a process to be able to convert it from this abundant monoatomic form in Earth's earlier oceans to the metallic that they could have used, you know, for atmospheric protection. Maybe that's what we're doing up there. You know, maybe there is a magnetic field, a field change that this solar system is about to go through. And they are, I don't know.
So maybe they're trying to do the same things that our elite are trying to do right now, is trying to keep out those waves from the center of our galaxy that are destined to actually create some changes in the consciousness of humanity. Maybe they're the same elite. They were the same elitists that we have right now.
I would venture to guess that the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. You know, because kingship and royalty was lowered from heaven,
right?
And in those Sumerian documents that predate the Bible, that constitute the Old Testament of the Bible. You know, with theories of creation and Noah and you know, all of those signposts that the Christians are so ardently attached to are far, far older,
right?
And they're older stories, you know, that go back to the Anunnaki and are you know, encapsulated and forever recorded in, you know, tens of thousands of Sumerian clay tablets. So, yeah, maybe. And I know, yeah. So we'll see if those energies show up. Are they do they write our genetic code? Do they fix that? And if so, that would be fascinating. And that's one of the reasons why the Ormus excites me, is because as the monoatomics come into your system, it literally creates cell by cell, chromosome by chromosome, strand of DNA by strand of DNA, a connection to its counterpart in your light body. And as those aspects of the physical body which need to be replaced, up until now, those 300 billion cells yesterday that needed to clone themselves copied all of the mistakes of the years past and passed it on to the next generation, saying, here, do your best. But now, with the Ormus in there, it has access to your energy body. And then it says, holy crap, we've been doing this wrong. And instead of replicating itself precisely, it says, ah, I can manifest from this new template. And so cells and DNA and chromosomes begin to manifest slowly but surely, correctly, and then health is restored.
This makes me think about that experiment that was done a couple of years ago, where somebody, I can't remember what radiation or what waves, or I think it was sound, but they put it through I can't remember if it was frog to salamander or salamander to frog, but they took...
It was salamander to frog, the laser beam through the embryo. And
right.
I can't remember if it was a Russian scientist or not who did that.
Which proves
what Scott's talking about. Well, at least in my book, it proves it.
Well, that makes me think of that. Well, what it did is they put it through some DNA from a salamander, and they shot this laser radiation through the salamander and into the frog embryo, and it birthed a salamander instead of a frog.
Interesting.
So it rewrote the DNA of the frog into a salamander. Just by some sort of radiation. I can't remember if it was, you know, light or sound or what it was, but I'd have to look that up to see.
It was a resonance.
Right.
And we And we know as the DNA is forming that a particular resonance will help that DNA connect or close those little ladders. And the more coarse a person's vibration, we're going to go back to the kymatics and then at some point go to YouTube and look at the kymatics video. The higher the vibration, the finer, the more intricate detail will show up in that resonance pattern. And so a coarse, low vibration, you can take this DNA strand, and in a low vibration, not many connectors are going to connect. Not many steps are going to make those proper connections. But in that higher resonance, many more of those steps will be connected. And so what seems to be up until about 15 years ago, oh, there's just so much junk DNA, we don't know what all of this is for. Well, that's the rest of you waiting to come out.
Yeah.
And I can't believe they call it junk DNA. It goes to show you where they're coming from.
I can't believe they call it a devil.
With the Ormus, in my experience, it's funny because you're bringing all this up and lights coming in from other places. So I started taking the Ormus, and I've been meditating for a minimum a decade. And it's not, when you take the Ormus, it's not like the next day, you know, you're floating in the air. It's not like that. But you definitely feel a difference. And on my way to work, I take the train. It always takes me an hour here in Japan. I always do meditation. I sit there in my seat and I do my own meditation. And I got this vision where I saw a sunspot, and then the sunspot had moved, and I can't remember if it was from north to west or west to north. And when it moved, the next vision I saw was a light bulb with some kind of like purplish or lavender laser or something like that hitting it and making it go out. So I just, I find it really interesting that when I was, basically what the Ormus did for me is it's made me a little more sensitive. If you're doing your meditation and your practice, you'll definitely feel it a lot more.
Yep. Yeah, if you're doing the meditation, the spiritual practice, your energies are already higher than so many other people. And so that allows you to be sensitive and open to those subtle energies that the monoatomic and the Ormus kind of bring in. You know, it is subtle. You know, it kind of starts with, you know, we have our physical body, and then we have another coating. We have another layer. That's the astral body, the emotional body. And then on that layer, above that, we have the mental body, the Brahmanda egg. And then above that, we have the causal body. And then after once we can get out of that, we're much, much closer to the soul body. But, you know, the subtle energies, you know, start to come in. And so we begin to see little changes in those higher, more etheric, subtle bodies. And that eventually changes us. And if there are energies coming from the sun, Nibiru, from the center of the galaxy, you know, it doesn't really matter. They're coming. And there is a correct code. And, you know, our physical bodies were the creation of, you know, another race of beings. And we are only as good as they wanted us to be. So as this code comes, I think it behooves us to have the monoatomics in our system so that as this code arrives and begins to intermingle or continues to intermingle with this reality, that we can begin to manifest that new code into this physical reality. And I think the monoatomics really help us connect with that inbound energy.
So. And now that you say that, with the whole chemtrail issue, when all the spraying and stuff they're putting up there, is that acting more, or are they trying to make it seem like, best way to describe it, it's like when you're driving and you go through a mud patch and you get all this mud all over your car and you can't see what's going on out, out, around you. So basically, like, this mud all over your body, all over your energy body, so you cannot receive these energies coming from the cosmos or the sun. And instead of them helping you, it can actually do the opposite, like the skin cancer. You know, they tell you don't get any sun because it gives you skin cancer. Then how will I get my D3?
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of the sun, and you know it has sustained all life, you know, on this planet, at least on the surface of this planet, and it's an absolute requirement. You know, we need gobs of vitamin D to stay healthy and cancer free. We need gobs of it, far more than most people are getting. And there's even you can Google something called sun gazing. It's a fascinating process. You, with the naked eye and without anything between you and the sun, you kind of lock in on it. And you can do that as the sun, you know, is just coming up in the morning till it's about 5-6 degrees off the horizon. And the same at sunset. There are other options during the day as you get the clouds to restrict the brightness. If it hurts, it's too bright. You know, how simple is that?
Yeah.
You know, but there's code there. There is consciousness there. And I think, you know, this planet is one of the sun's babies, and it looks out for it. And I think part of what's happening with 2012 is there's going to be a change of the guard at the sun. And there will be a new color, a new energy, a new wavelength, a new resonance that'll be emitting from the sun. And it'll change all of us. It will change all of us.
Speaking of resonance, I was looking at one of your YouTube videos about how the Ormus is created, and inside the Merkaba, and what really piqued my interest was the Roden coil. What does the Roden coil actually do for it?
The Roden coil is it's kind of a fascinating device. The inventor is Marco Roden, or Roden, and he's a mathematician. It uses a vector-based mathematics, vector of nine, and what happens is we have this this donut. It really is the shape of a donut made of a sacred ash wood, and then it's wrapped nine times with nine strands of gold alternating silver, and then with that shape, and you put a charge through it, you create a singularity. You create a little white hole, black hole at that center, and it's in the ethers. And, you know, the people who are sensitive and have sight can see it. And what we then do to charge the Roden coil is we take something called Sofagio tones. And these tones, I think presently we've got 29 running in three different sets. 29 tones that then resonate and create a different flavored singularity in the middle of the Roden coil. And so it the whole purpose is to kind of clean the energies. And then we kind of park the Ormus in that room and underneath the Merkaba to pick up that charge. And there's just, yeah, that's just part of the project.
So the 29 is synchronistic for me because twos and nines are my number, and I see them everywhere. So I think I'm going to have to delve a little deeper into this.
Yeah, the Sofagio tones are really, really kind of cool.
They're, now, how do you spell that?
Solfeggio. Sofagio. Sofagio. Depends on what part of the country you're from. Or which country you're from.
The guy
that we've got the videos of, G.W. Harden, is he's kind of a special man because he has his story is so long it would take another 2 hours. he just has direct communication to the angelic realm. It's just that simple. And you know, they come in and give him hints and clues and let him figure things out. And you know, his last work, you know, they gave him tones that open up transport gateways, you know, something you can send your consciousness through to go peek in on other realities. And it's just, you know, it's it can be a hole you don't really want to go down, because it can really distract you from figuring yourself out. You know,
well,
and it can draw you into the outside world more than you really need to be.
Well, I astral project, so I know all about peeking into those other worlds.
Well, have fun tonight.
Oh, that's an amazing experience.
Yeah, indeed. So you familiar with Robert Monroe?
Oh, yes, Monroe Institute. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
He's done some fantastic work there.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I kind of developed my own methods. You know, I take a little bit from here and a little bit from there, and I found what fit me right.
Yep.
And
that's what you have to do. You have to find what works.
Absolutely. Each one of us is different, and each one of us has our own path to walk. So.
Uh huh.
Oh, go ahead.
No. Go ahead, man.
And I was gonna say with me, I always kind of. I wake up and I'm there astral projecting. Like,
you're,
I could never.
You're out of the plate.
Yeah, I could never do the transition fully awake.
Yeah, the conscious intentional. He just slips into it out of dream state.
Yeah, that's a gift that when you're capable of doing that, and then at some point you'll realize, instead of projecting, you don't have to go out and about, but that you can go in and up.
Well, that's what it is.
Okay.
That's what it is.
There's the two different schools of thought, and what's out there is in there.
Yeah, as above, so below.
Yep.
Who is it?
Yep. It's Boeing. What are our planes doing, did you say?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, so, for sale.
Here's one thing I find kind of amazing and weird at the same time. In Japan, and maybe I'm not noticing them, because back in New York City where I grew up, I used to see them. I remember seeing them as a kid when I was around 5, 6, and I'm 34 now, so this is the early 80s, late 70s. But here in Japan, I seen the contrails, but I haven't seen any chemtrails. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because there was a gentleman named Michael Mulfer. I might be mispronouncing his name. And he supposedly has a tie with...
I think you mean Benjamin Fulford.
Yeah, Benjamin Fulford.
Oh, Benjamin. I know Benjamin.
Yeah, he supposedly has a tie with these... like a band of assassins, of Asian assassins. And according to what I heard from him, they threatened the people behind this whole chemtrail thing and said not to do it over Asia. I haven't seen any here, so it makes me wonder whether that story is true or not.
I've seen them over Beijing.
Oh, you have? Okay.
I've seen them over Moscow, and all within the last year. It was interesting because there were some over Beijing during the Olympics in 2008. And now,
well, they admitted that they were doing some kind of weather modification.
Yep, they did, and they'd like to admit about UFOs and disclosure and artifacts on the moon. You know, the Chinese are going to have a heyday, you know, fussing over the American intelligence and the NSA. You know, the Chinese could really, really bring down the Western powers by telling a little bit of truth.
Yeah, I hope they do.
You know, telling secrets. At some point, it's going to happen. That's just part of the path to disclosure, and they'll use disclosure to keep the population agitated and in fear. You know, because the reality is being moved, and people don't like that. People don't like change. But that is the one thing that is certain here in the lower worlds is change. You know, so
yeah.
You think we would have figured, the religions would have figured that out, and we kind of would have embraced our reality, but that hasn't been the case. The reason I don't think you see many chemtrails over Japan is that I don't think they do, or at least the powers that be, don't do a lot of weather engineering over there. The storms come off of Russia, they come off of China, and boom, they're there. So they can do some course steering And so you're going to get fantastic geometry in the clouds. The chemtrails allow the precision of the weather engineering to be refined. And that keeps, you know, bizarre shapes out of the cloud patterns. But if you're not allowed to fly over North Korea, if you're not allowed to fly over China and Russia, then you're just going to have to do it by view from satellite. And you're not, it's not going to be as finessed because the chemtrails give them data. They give them observational data. They give them, you know, wind speeds and temperatures and, you know, all of those things with those fleet of planes flying through the atmosphere. And then it gets very, very intense as you get off the west coast of the U.S., all through the U.S., and also very, very intense from Iceland into the U.K. as they entrain and steer and adjust the weather as it moves on to the continents.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I just don't think there's a lot of Western power weather engineering that happens just upstream from Japan, and they're not capable of flying aircraft there, so you don't see them.
Hmm. I was a witness to a few things that amazed me. One of them was they were spraying chemtrails over James Ranch during the conference. Tom was there, and Tom can tell you it was ridiculous how much they were spraying.
He's talking about James Gillo and Esetti Ranch.
Esetti, yeah.
Yeah, and the one... There was the one day that they were spraying ridiculous, and James just turns to me and said, "Watch this." And then he just, like, did, like, a little prayer, and I guess he called in the higher dimensional beings, and this gust of wind was so strong that everybody's tent was getting blown out. But the chemtrail was, it just became a clear day in several hours. All the clouds that came from the chemtrail were gone. And there was another time that they were spraying at nighttime, and so we couldn't see the stars and watch the ships fly over. And people were drumming, and I don't know if you were there, Tom. And
yes, I was. When it was cloudy everywhere, and we cleared the sky directly above the ranch.
Yeah, and we just put our intentions in clear the sky. So I was going to mention, if you know any techniques or anything in particular, because I've seen it, so I know it's possible that we as human beings can actually, you know, if you're in the area you live, you're getting chemtrail a lot, how you can do it.
I think you've just explained it.
Yeah, I think it's intention. It's all intention and faith.
And knowing. Knowing.
Yes. Knowing.
Yeah, knowing that it can be done, and that accomplishes the fact. You know, faith is sweet, hope is sweet, but, you know, it's knowing gets things done.
Yeah, yeah. There is a huge difference between belief and knowing.
Yep, and then knowing is usually only comes with wisdom, and, you know, that wisdom then is from experience. So you're at the point where you know it can happen, and that makes you a far more powerful being in that kind of action in the skies than most other people. So what I would say is keep practicing, keep doing it. You know, keep on knowing.
Yeah, there was a friend of mine in New York used to always say that believing is for the birds. You have to know.
You gotta know. You really do.
And with that being said, don't believe anything we say. Do your own research.
Exactly.
Go out there and do your own research. I mean, because we all just have a piece of the puzzle. None of us have the whole picture.
And sweet thing is don't be judgmental about information. You know, it's one thing I learned years ago is read it, try to understand it, do not throw it away, file it away. And as your understanding grows, then these data points, these pixels in the big picture, begin to coalesce. And that can only happen when you're operating from a non-judgmental state. And that is very, very difficult to do in this society because, you know, we're told to be judgmental. And it does not serve us in the least.
Mm.
So. Exactly. So
we're getting to the top of the hour. any closing statement? Statement.
Trust me. The lips and the mind will all come into sync in time.
So, what are you working on now, and what's going on now for you?
Honestly, I'm still doing photography of the skies. I need to write another chemtrail page article incorporating the aspect of the Oregon in the sky and how they're using these trails as potential step-down tools. So they can take the energy from the ethers, from the etheric, from the chi, and then the powders, because you can see where these planes fly. They love flying through cirrus bursts and long cirrus trail clouds. And so it's almost as if the ether is beginning to manifest in a geometric form. And then it moves very quickly through the atmosphere and creating these long, thin, mare's tail kind of clouds. Slifs was the word that I've read. And so these powders take this etheric energy, turn it into electromagnetic energy, which then steps down to thermodynamics. And thermodynamics is humidity. And that drives, you know, mainstream weather. That's where their brain is in thermodynamics. So I'm wondering if there aren't etheric forces creating our weather, and they want to see what those look like. And so they have to lace them up with powders to make them visible. So that's usually in the day two before a storm arrives. Day one, it's more about shaping it, and then day zero as the storm is through, you can stand outside in the rain and hear the planes low and slow flying through it as they're working the ionization aspect. So
people can reach you to get the Ormus or find out more about what you're doing?
The weather stuff, the weather research is at weatherwars.info, and then the Ormus is Blue Water Alchemy, all one word, at bluewateralchemy.com, and then the email for that is bluewateralchemy@gmail.com.
So, right, we've got links. Go ahead.
No, we're just all about consciousness. It's about bringing consciousness in, because that's the one thing we need, is people to see.
Exactly. Yeah. Hence the reason why, one of the reasons why we call this Conscious TV.
So right on, guys.
I think we have links to both those sites on our both BBS and on our webpage at conscious-tv.com. And I'd encourage anybody to stop in there and support us if you can, and check out the material we got going on there. Speaking of consciousness, I'm doing the Emoto rice experiment. I'm documenting it and taking pictures every day of it on the website. It's a pretty interesting experiment, so I'm not going to tell you about it. You got to go to the website and check it out. So,
Scott, thank you once again. It's been a great pleasure. We definitely have to have you on again.
Great.
Tom, any closing statements?
I just want everybody to enjoy this holiday season. Everybody be safe driving to wherever you're going, to grandma's house, through the woods and over the snow and all that stuff. And
turkey in Japan, please.
This is an absolutely amazing time to be alive. And just being here right now is a gift. Remember, we're all part of this, and we all contribute in our own ways, and thank you for your contribution.
Hey, Tom, don't forget your Einstein quote.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I got to sign off with my most favorite quote from Mr. Albert Einstein. Condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance.
Thank you, and have a good night.
Have a good night.
Wherever you may be.
Thanks a lot, Scott. You bet.